Hey there, St. Louis. Truman's in Soulard is ready for you this summer. With our beautiful patio and our sand volleyball leagues, we are the best place to hang out any night of the week. Got tickets to the Cardinal game? We will drive you to the game on our free shuttle to avoid those expensive parking costs.
Anyone need a ride to the ballpark?
Plus, check out our daily specials online at TrumanSoulard.com or follow us on Facebook at Truman Sports Bar. Truman's, your neighborhood bar.
Let's ask Jennings for his Mount Rushmore of female morning after listeners, because this is kind of becoming a thing.
It really is.
I'd be hard pressed to get to four.
No. I think we're getting near.
Hold on. This is going to be like a mentalist trick.
Yeah. You think you know?
Write down what I think it will be.
Well, of course you could. There's only three or four that listen.
No, that's not true.
But then admit to listening.
No, if you would be a little more active on the fan page.
There might be a women's prison in the area that I don't know about.
These are nice stand-up ladies. You've got some of them.
I have submitted my Mount Rushmore that I think Jennings will.
Now, I'm going to put a caveat on this because I don't know how much she listens or how she gets involved. But she makes my weekday every weekday.
She makes your weekday.
Holy L.
I'm already off.
But does she know? I don't count her as a listener, Tim. I put her in addendum.
Okay.
She's an addendum.
So there's, Doug, there's an addendum.
Addendum.
She showed up once when we were at Anheuser-Busch.
And they were very happy with her being there.
Well, yeah.
Both of them.
Seamaster, because Seamaster occasionally tweets.
He does.
I saw that.
He only else. He'll find me something once in a while. You got to go Janie the Lesbian. I mean,
and I figured she was the George Washington.
Yeah, she's absolutely. She's just a grand lady.
A grand lady.
I mean,
she's described like Eleanor Roosevelt.
Sounds like she's 75 years of age.
She's a funny gal. She's cool. Her going away party was great. She's just a good girl.
All right.
I got to go CGB, Chrissy Gregory Blake, Chrissy Runner Girl.
CGB.
For the work that she's done with Lawrence. And her commitment to the fan page.
Doug, she's a moderator.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's a big thing for
her. It's a lot of responsibility.
We're approaching 5,000 members on that fan page, Jennings. It's going to happen here within the next week.
That's you can have all the ratings you want. When you can tell somebody you have 5,000 people committed to a page on Facebook to your radio show, you're doing okay.
And what about when you sell out two flights of a golf tournament in 48 hours? That stunned you. Stunned the great Jeff Smith.
Jeff Smith was.
I saw Smitty at Billie Jean's.
He said he saw you.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, the rich just—they all hang together, Doug. You know that.
The country club set. Sure. See, you couldn't come up with a fourth.
No, he's debating.
He's got JTL. He's got Chrissy Runner.
While I've never had the opportunity to meet the Walker, Ellen.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to include her.
She is certainly, I think, a staple of the program. And I know I scare her a little bit, and that's understandable. She's a little more proper than some of the other ladies.
Sure.
So I do put her on there. There's this kind of mover and shaker now called Becky Weisberger, who's on the Morning After fan page.
A mover and shaker.
But she's moving up the list. Jordan... I mean, it's
have you
really
met Howard Jordan?
No.
Have you met Becky?
I have not met
so
Becky.
So you haven't met any of these?
No, I have.
Katie the Lesbian and Chrissy Runner Girl you have.
I have met both of them. I have yet to meet KKD.
So I'm surprised KKD didn't make the list. I thought she might be right
there
with
Katie. She's also a host, too. She plays around. She does. I don't know. She's an interesting gal. When she talked
Doug,
about.
Does that surprise you?
When she talked about having cuddling time with people that did her laundry.
That really upset the Barnhart Brawler. I mean, really set him off.
That's one even I can't pull off, you know?
Yeah.
Who am I missing?
Well, you've already given him out, Rushmore. I mean, you have Janie the Lesbian.
Right.
You have the Runner Girl.
Right.
You have Becky from the fan page.
Yeah.
And then you had...
KKD. And then there's Freebs.
But you mentioned Caller Ellen. You mentioned Caller Jordan.
It's really hard, Doug.
Freebs has brought us gifts here on the show. How does she not make the Mount Rushmore?
Again, she's a little apprehensive. I don't know if she gets in the gutter as much as I do.
So this really comes down to women you play with their feet.
And
you like the vile
talk,
women.
And talk smack, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's good. Right. But I really appreciate Freebs for, you know, the St. Joe background and the whole deal. I like it.
Guys, I have my Mount Rushmore of bad callers.
Ellen, Stephen Wildwood, all from the wealthy part of West County, and Ellen. Thank you.
Oh, double Ellen. What about Chaps?
Cousin. Double Ellen.
Yeah, Chaps has not been on this often. So, Plow Penguin, what's your Mount Rushmore of TMA female listeners?
I'm going to go, I don't care what that texter said, caller Ellen is one of the nicest people I have ever talked to.
Have you met her?
I have. She actually has brought in food, I think, once, mm-hmm. and come and hang out another time with us at the station last year. So she is number one.
Would I like her in person?
Oh, yeah. Jay,
who don't you like, honestly?
That's
though.
A good point. Yeah, I mean,
Jay, you'd be a huge fan. Yeah. Two would probably be, caller Jordan would be number two.
Have you met caller Jordan?
I think, I don't know if I've actually met her.
I think you'd remember.
Yeah, you met her
but
when
at Billie
Jean's. I was with her last
yes.
Saturday.
So I know who she is.
You were there.
Yeah. I don't know if we formally introduced, but she's a great.
Well, I would have introduced you. I'm a gentleman.
Fantastic
texter.
I know.
She is neat.
And then I would have Janie the Lesbian, who is unbelievably nice. Awesome, cool chick. Yep. Got to put her in there. And for my final one, that's going to be a toughie.
Wow, Doug, this is tough.
This is breaking.
I think I got Chrissy Runner Girl for what she does with Larry, as well as what she deals with on a day-to-day basis with the fan page.
Yeah.
That's my top four.
Doug,
right
you don't appreciate the responsibility of the fan page.
No, and to know that there's even a non-compete clause in it. Did you know that?
I know there were some issues.
Gotta be kidding me.
Like I said, I try and just stay around, throw jabs once in a while.
It was a serious post by a guy who usually never posts. Saying that the reason why Bobby is in control of the fan page is because the guy who started it had a non-compete with another fan page. And a bunch of people go, oh, that makes sense. And I go, hold on a second. As somebody who has had non-competes, I'm telling you, it makes no sense whatsoever.
There's no fan page non-competes.
Well, Zuckerberg is really tightening that ship up.
We got to put.
And people are like, oh, I like that. That makes all the sense in the world. Good point. Thanks for giving us some background. It was just complete BS.
Bobby Bestel.
There has to be some employer involved who doesn't want you to take your intellectual knowledge or something else to another
place of employment.
You don't
think it's just fan page to fan page?
No!
It is somewhat surprising. Do you have a fan page, Doug?
Uh-oh.
Hell no.
Now there's going to be one.
I mean, that's really surprising that you don't have one.
Why would I have one? Why would I need
it? Charlie has one.
Yeah.
It's set up by the Two Fox.
Chaz has one.
And he'll occasionally send out things saying, hey, could you like my fan page? That's a humbling thing to have to do.
What is he now, Charlie Leonard?
Charles Leonard. And he's growing his hair out like Quinn Snyder.
I posted on Facebook yesterday, little Quinn.
He's going through a transformation as he prepares to get married.
Let's just hope he doesn't go too far.
And you want to know what's more pathetic about the fan page. I love it. But how it started, I think... I remember that correctly. It originally started because people were complaining that their emails weren't being read. So they made the fan page so people could type up their emails so other listeners could read it. And I think that's how it all started.
Yep. That is true. And Bestel wanted to do Photoshops of Doug. That's what it, mm-hmm. That was another part of it.
Yes. And yeah. then came Buck.
Buck Swope,
so
who is the show historian.
He is. I mean, he posts stuff, the SoundCloud. It's big, Doug.
When you're in jail, you've got time to do nonsensical stuff like this. What else are you going to do? You can only make so many license plates.
Yes.
Guys, what about Townie? That's from Miguel Cairo's Egyptian Linen Store.
Yeah.
Well Townie's an intern.
Miguel Cairo's Egyptian Linen Store.
That's right. They're active in the text inbox. They do good work. Guys, wow. Plowboy just said the fan page is pathetic. This could get rough. That's from the troll.
Oh, yeah.
Plowboy, do you want to walk back that statement, as they say, about any time Mitch McConnell comes to a microphone?
I think I said right after that, but I love it. I love the fan page. I'm on it daily. I commend people for putting things out there. I love the Photoshops and whatnot. But I thought the reasoning for the fan page now is maybe because people were complaining about their emails not being read was pathetic. That was the pathetic part, not the fan page itself.
So he walked it back.
Good idea.
Doug, we have Dave Reed. Now, he played for Ken Hitchcock and won a chalice with the Stars in 1999. He'll be with us, and that's brought to you by the National Blues Museum, new sponsor here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. That's coming up at 8:30. Kelly Chase at 9 o'clock. He is with us after every Blues Stanley Cup playoff game, and in this case, since we haven't had him on since after Game 7 on Tuesday morning, he's going to be with us to get you ready for Game 1. I'm going to give you a brief aside here.
Yes.
And this is something, and I'm saying it very sincerely, and I don't know if Chase is listening. It doesn't really matter, but this is how I truly feel. He called me yesterday, and he was saying, hey. And by the way, I got the number for the guy who's become the Twitter sensation.
His handle went down.
Yeah. What's his name? Solu City or something like that?
Something like that. Soul City?
City Monster?
I don't know what it is.
Well, that's his handle, and then his name is Tony X, I believe.
Tony X.
Tony X.
So, anyway, I have that number if we want to have him on. I don't know. I mean, he's done.
But what?
Wonderful Chris Gardner did.
Did they have him on?
Gardner talked to him on the phone after Hockman interviewed him for the paper.
Okay, because I know you said Gardner was going to try and get him, but I didn't want to see block. We have this
figured out a time yet.
Okay, all right. So then they'll be on the writer's block. Fine. God bless. But anyway, Chase was saying, hey, you want to have this guy on? He was just on Good Morning America. Caruso. Doug, he's a generous executive.
Sure.
With the Blues.
Helps out Mike Lee.
Occasionally will text Doug and I during the show and a little critical of what's going on in the show every once in a while.
He scolds us. Almost.
A little bit. And he was able to get the number over to me. But I was talking to Chase, and it just struck me. One of the things about what's going on, and again, all they've done is won one round.
Right.
But with that said, it's truly captivated the city. I think, again, Jay, you brought it up in the 7 o'clock hour. If it would have been the Wild, for example, as opposed to the Blackhawks, and they were the 1 and the Wild were the 8 as played out for Dallas,
yep.
It wouldn't have done what it's done. If it would have been like a 5-game series win, it wouldn't have done what it's done. But a 7-game series of that caliber of hockey, it's brought a lot of people on board who aren't normally hockey fans. The Fox Sports Midwest numbers speak for themselves. And then also the NBC Sports numbers from a national perspective speak to how great that series was and how great the Game 7 was. So it's broken through a lot of people who otherwise would go, oh, they never got out of the first round, or, oh, I don't care about hockey. So that's outstanding. For the organization, it's outstanding. But in talking to Chase yesterday, and he's going to be with us at 9 o'clock, one of the things that I don't know if it's been talked about much, and it hit me after getting off the phone with him, and I could just tell how effing happy he was. And it wasn't like a long conversation. He just was so effing happy that for the guys who played for this organization, and so many of them live here after they're done playing, which I think has played such a monster role in St. Louis becoming a hockey hotbed for youth hockey, because you have these guys who play in the league keeping their kids in St. Louis and they keep their families here and then coaching. They're invested in this. And, I mean, I think for them, if and when that time comes where the St. Louis Blues are on the Stanley Cup, they would take ownership in that. They wouldn't run around saying it, but emotionally they would have ownership in that, and it would mean the world to them because that name has never been on the most storied trophy, I think, in all of sports, at the very least, one of. And so for guys like Chase, and I would imagine then from that point on, you can start naming dozens of other players. You want to go back to one of the oldest Blues who's still active in the community, and Bobby Plager.
Yep.
All the way through guys who recently stopped playing with the Blues or recently stopped playing the game. Or you saw Paul Bissonnette. Who's playing in the AHL, penned a column for the USA Today a couple days ago, why he is still pulling for the Blues, even though he isn't with the organization. He was only with them for 2 weeks because he loved the way the organization went about it and the guys in the room. He raved about how good of a guy Backes is, a leader that he is, how Alex Steen, he's never seen anybody work harder, and how Ryan Reeves, who he was paid to fight when he was with the Coyotes, was such a good guy, and that he invited him and Ryan Whitley out to his house. Just for the 2 weeks he was with the team, Steve Ott, who's one of the most hated guys in the league for being kind of the Tyson Nash of 2016, just getting in your grill and pesting and trying to draw penalties, how he was such a good guy. But for the guys who, you know, like a Kelly Chase, and then all these other names, obviously,
Bruce Affleck.
Brett Hull,
yes.
Bernie Federko, Bruce Affleck, as you make reference to, a Bobby Plager. They're still emotionally out on the ice with this organization.
Yes.
And it just hit me, and maybe Chase was just having a really good day, and I'm drawing a conclusion that is completely unwarranted and perhaps like some kind of emotional populist column that really has no substance to it. But I really that hit me then. I'm like, God, he's in – and God bless him. You know, it's not like he's in a bad mood most of the time. He's always an amusing cat.
But it was a different feel.
But I just am like, God, he is so damn excited, and I'm so – effing happy for him and all these other guys, because it isn't like a stop along the way like they played for the Atlanta Thrashers. You know, I mean, this is something that they're still here. They love the organization, and what happened against the Blackhawks, and in particular what happened Monday night for a Game 7 to take place in St. Louis with a win, against the defending cup champions. And then you look at the landscape and you go, okay, we just did that. Maybe we can finally do the one we've been talking about without really saying it for so many years. And from that capacity, it took on a greater appreciation for me, I guess, as a media guy, whatever the hell I am, slash fan. So there's a little brief aside. That was my brief aside for the day. Is that sponsored, Tim's brief asides?
Well, it wasn't that brief. It was a nice, healthy aside.
Yeah, so it shouldn't be called the brief aside.
But he's right.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at how strong the Blues Alumni Association is. I mean, there's so many guys that you come in contact with over the years. Terry Yake. I mean,
yeah, he's big into it.
You know, there's just so many guys. I think of Rob Ramage, who played here, and so many other guys that have stayed, as Tim said, part of the community. This just wasn't a bump along the way.
Yeah, I mean, McInnes, of course, you know, is with the organization, but before he took a job, he was here.
Coaching.
Yeah. Kachuk, very active.
No doubt.
Jeff Brown,
yes.
Guy's incredibly active.
You wonder if that happened.
I mean, all these guys that stayed, and then now you see all these guys coming out of St. Louis playing in the league. I don't remember in the 1980s when that was the case, but I don't think it was.
It was not.
You wonder if that happens in other NHL cities, if the former players tend to settle there. Because most of them grew up a long way away from here,
right. Nowhere
close, and not many of them seem to go back home.
See, I think
I don't
that
know if it's
says,
just so damn cold in Canada. They say we're happy to be out of the frigid north, or if they just like staying in a town where there's somebody. You know, some of these guys, if they played 3 or 4 years in the league, if they move back to who knows where,
right. They're
just another guy.
Right.
But if they stay in St. Louis, they're still something special.
Guys, it seems like a lot of guys feel that way that aren't even local. They're still pulling for the team big time, too. Sergio Mimeso's interview earlier this week would be an example. Yes, he, if you remember that, when Sergio Mimeso was on Monday or Tuesday.
Modano essentially said the same thing with Joe Roderick.
Yeah, talking about... Because of Hitchcock and playing for him and his stars.
Yep.
So I thought that, you know, and you don't necessarily think about that because you don't have that with any of the other teams. When it was the Rams here in St. Louis, the history, you know, Eric Dickerson, it's not like he was pulling against the Rams, but he identified as the L.A. Rams.
Sure.
How can you blame him for it? That's where he played. And then the history for the greatness of the St. Louis Rams was that brief supernova, and then it just became a punchline for a decade. So there wasn't that opportunity for Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk to come back and cheer on a great Rams team. But here you're talking about, you know, decades of really good teams, if not some great teams, that never have gotten there. And there is this sense, and then they proved it, that this one is different. This one is different. And it's kind of become this rallying point that at the very least, even if they lose to the Stars, that these guys are really experiencing an emotional high. And I hadn't thought about that because I thought about the city needed it in a way. Of course, the fan base, the casual, but specifically the hardcores.
Yep.
And then the organization itself, both financially and then also for the guys in the front office from the hockey side of business, the business. And that made me happy. All by itself. But then I talk to Chase, and then I'm thinking about when they're getting together, and obviously he's hanging around guys he played with and people who played in the organization, even if he wasn't with them at the time. And that just, I'm like, yeah, man, these guys, this is what they have been waiting for. They may have stopped playing 10, 15, 40 years ago.
But they're still invested.
But they are still absolutely invested, and they are riding this out with the rest of us, and that's a really amazing thing that I don't think, as you were just saying, Doug, is necessarily the case for other organizations. And I think part of it is because this has been such a, I don't know if tortured is the right way, although I'm sure some of the hardcores would say tortured experience with numerous kind of Missouri athletics moments where you go, oh, my God, yeah, remember that one? Oh, God, remember that one?
We've been well-trained.
Yes.
This is probably a very comfortable place for people to play. We've had ownership that players love, Stillman, and, you know, going – back
Shanahan.
Mike Shanahan. Yeah, I don't know about Dave Checkets, but I don't think people disliked him necessarily. He did some odd things on a business
kind of a carpetbagger.
Yeah. And except for the brief Mike Keenan era, they've had likable coaches. Everybody loved playing for Quinville, and they seem to like playing for Hitchcock for
Sutter.
The most part.
Yep.
Yeah, they've had likable. The media doesn't rip people apart if they have a bad game or if they get bounced out. The fans are nice to the players. They don't come unglued. So it's probably a very comfortable place for people to play.
And Roderick asked me this question yesterday. Out of the teams that are left, which are what, in the West, obviously Dallas, who we got, and then San Jose and who's left? Help.
Nashville.
Nashville and San Jose.
If you look at those four cities, and obviously Dallas has experienced success, but I think if you look at those four cities, the most passionate hockey fan is in St. Louis.
Oh, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're working with a station in Dallas to cover the series best we can. Sometimes we borrow photographers and everything.
WFAA, the crown jewel?
No.
KTVT.
No. That's what we're working with, the CBS. They're not sending anybody here to round two. They said, we're just not really that much into it. And it's, you know, it's only second round. And
we got the football.
We got the draft and the football going on. Yeah, that's what they said. They're
no,
not
I mean, and I kind of thought for a minute. I said, no, it's a layup. I mean, while Nashville was a question whether it was going to, how well it was going to work, they've got a nice fan base, but nothing like we got.
Right. Well, and some of it gets back to, too, what else we have going on in St. Louis? What do we have other than sports? This is what we have.
We got the Muni Opera.
Yeah, but a lot of these other big cities, they got lots of things going on that we don't have.
Yeah, San Francisco, and that'll fairly.
That's why the Cardinals are a religion here, and right now the Blues are reaching that status, and the Rams could have been if they weren't such an unlikable organization.
If they'd have tried a little bit.
It wasn't just how much can we, what can we do to turn you all against us? Because they were, you know, people loved the Rams as much as they loved the Cardinals. You go back to the early 2000s. The Rams were it. But, you know.
They sure fumbled.
With Kroenke, when he came on board, then it went the other way, obviously.
Guys, maybe all the St. Louis fat girls remind the Canadians of home. Thanks. The hipster of Tower Grove South. Doug, I didn't theorize that.
I don't know that it is.
That's the hipster of Tower Grove South.
The down on the farm girls.
It is the Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and InsideSTL.com. We're broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Tim McKernan, Doug Vaughn, and Jennings Randolph Jr. with you here on the radio program. Another new great sponsor joining us on this radio presentation is the National Blues Museum. It's at 615 Washington Avenue in downtown St. Louis. It's an interactive museum with videos and computer exhibits. They have a live music performance room with concerts on Saturday afternoons. Open 7 days a week from 10 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday, and noon to 5, Sunday through Monday. Mention that you heard about them here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, and you receive a discount at the door. Tours available for school groups and civic organizations. Check out their website, nationalbluesmuseum.org, for more information and to see their schedule of live performances. Follow them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. It's the National Blues Museum, the sponsor of our daily Blues playoff guest. And joining us right now is Dave Reed, the NHL Network analyst, joining us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Great to have you on the show. You won a cup under Ken Hitchcock, so you know what it's like to play for the Blues head coach. And I've heard a few guys who've played for him discuss how demanding he can be as head coach. Is that a fair way to describe him from your experience?
Pretty much. Excuse me. Ken is, I always say Ken's a perfectionist when you're coming to the details of the game. So it doesn't matter if you've got good or bad ice. If a puck bounces over your stick, Ken would expect you to have it. And that's just the way Ken sees the game and expects everybody to be perform at their best every shift, even in practice. And at times that can wear on you. It's to be perfect in every situation is absolutely impossible. But by pushing players to that level to have higher expectations of themselves, it usually draws out the best in each player. And that's what Ken does, and he's had success with that. But it can be demanding. It can be a mental push that you have to constantly really be focused on what you're doing. But that's what coaches are. That's what the boss is there, to make sure that you bring your best game in and game out. And Ken's done that with every team he's been on. He's had success. But it can be, it's a different approach than a lot of coaches, but it can be mentally draining more than the physical aspects of it.
See, one of those coaches you don't like so much when you're playing with them, and then when your career's done, you look back and say, well, that might have been the best coach I ever had.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I've said that. I think a lot of players would say that. Mike Keenan was another one in that category with lots of success, and he actually coached in St. Louis as well. And Scotty Bowman, another past St. Louis coach is another coach who's put in that category that pushed you extremely hard, but you don't really realize what they've done and how they've done it and the success that they've allowed you to have until you're done and you can sit back and look at your whole career. And I would definitely was in that group many times. I mean, I wasn't a star player on the first line, but many times, you know, I'd come home just shaking my head going, man, you know, this is crazy. And then at the end of the day, we win a Stanley Cup together. And I remember hugging him on the ice, thanking him for everything he did the 3 years that I was in Dallas. And that was the last game I played when we won the Cup in 99. But, yeah, you don't appreciate it until it's done. No question about it.
Dave, while it was just a first-round win, it seems like so much more for us in St. Louis, as the fans, and even maybe to a certain extent some of the players, because of the lack of success. What did you think of the Blues' performance in that seven-game series against the defending Stanley Cup champions?
I thought it was excellent. That was, you know, that could have been a Stanley Cup final for the way it was played and the intensity from start to finish. The Blues are a deep team up front, a deep team on the back end. Brian Elliott was fantastic in net. They stayed with their game plan. They didn't waver, and their moments of panic were minimal, probably matched, I should say, the Chicago Blackhawks' moments of panic through the first round. And you had everything that you really wanted as a St. Louis Blue. From the physical side of it, they matched that. The speed, you know, Chicago and St. Louis, they matched that, and scoring wise. You know, St. Louis did exactly what they had to, and it's a huge hurdle to get past a kind of a nemesis and get through the first round and to beat, you know, especially when, you know, the nemesis is the defending Stanley Cup champions. To get that out of the way early, it's not something like, oh, okay, you know, we have to get to here, we have to get to here. No, we're going to do it right away. Now we've got to get past it. And I thought it was a fantastic first round. I thought St. Louis played extremely well, top to bottom. And now they've got to match that. You know, I talk about perfection that Ken wants when you get to the rink. Now that the St. Louis Blues have done that against the Stanley Cup champs, they've got to match that level of play at the start of the second round against the Dallas Stars.
How would you expect them to approach this series with Dallas? They had to be more physical to slow down the Dallas offensive weapons?
That would be one aspect of it, but yeah, being more physical, you have to watch that you don't take penalties. Dallas has got plenty of weapons up front, much as St. Louis, that you don't want to be in the penalty box. But I think the key to the series is going to be on the back end of the Dallas Stars. If St. Louis can get in and create some real disruption on Dallas's back end in their own zone and create some mismatches in front of the net and outwork them down low, Dallas has a tendency to kind of relax a little bit in their own zone, and it's been one of the issues that Lindy Ruff's been working with all year to improve, and they've done a fantastic job over the course of the last few years by becoming a better defensive team, but that's still something that they're working on constantly, and St. Louis can expose with just the size and the way that the Blues like to play that physical game and that real heavy game and rolling off checks and beating their opponents to the front of the net and outworking their opponents in front of the net. I think that's something that the Blues can really use to their advantage in their offensive zone and isolate one-on-one situations with Dallas's defensemen down low and in front of the net. And we've seen the Blues win those battles before, and we saw Minnesota win some of those battles against the Dallas Stars, and that's something that I think the Blues can expose and probably do a better job of than the Stars can do against the St. Louis Blues in the Blues defensive zone.
About everybody we talked to, former players, coaches, GMs, they seem to all be picking the Blues in this series. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I stopped picking the Blues this year because every time I pick them, they lose.
So, yeah, stop.
Thank you.
You
know,
I'll do it then.
Knowing Hitch and knowing Doug Armstrong from my Dallas days, I really like what the team, how the team's put together and how they play, but it was kind of like picking San Jose. You're like, wow, these guys are really good. They're playing fantastic, and then they don't seem to get it done. So, but in saying that, I am picking them over St. Louis or over Dallas. I think it's the defensive part of the game is going to win. Both teams' offense can be very powerful, but it's who's going to be able to shut down the opposition when need be. And I think Dallas's defense compared to St. Louis's defense, that's the weakness in this series. And St. Louis, and even in goal, Brianelli has played outstanding. And sometimes the Dallas goaltenders get exposed because of the defensive lapses in front of them. And I still give the edge to Brian Elliott over either Lettinen or Niemi, but it's the defense, I think, that's going to win this series, and I think the Blues' defense is going to win out.
Yeah, we've seen what a hot goalie can do. We saw that with Jonathan Quick a few times, where he would just kind of dominate the whole series when the Blues played them. You think Elliott is at that level? Is he a guy capable of winning the series?
I believe he is. The way he's played, there's no reason he can't. The way he's played over the course of the season as well. This isn't just a one series for Brian Elliott. He's played extremely well, and he's improved over the course of his career year after year, and he continues to show he can do it. And now that he's, you know, he's got the ball, so to speak, and he's running with it, I think in this series, that's going to be a big key for St. Louis. He's playing extremely well. He's got lots of confidence, much as the rest of his teammates. And it's proven down the, you know, over the course of time in playoffs that a goaltender can win a series, like you say, and there's no reason Brian Elliott's play isn't going to continue. And if it does continue, the Dallas Stars are going to be tough to outscore the St. Louis Blues.
Dave Reed's our guest right now in the Ryan Kelly Morning After. He is presented by the National Blues Museum here on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM. Dave, looking at the other series, and this is something that kind of got a little momentum yesterday on Twitter, and I don't know if there's necessarily a solution to it, but you have the Sharks playing the Predators. Of course, this isn't the way that it was expected to be, with Anaheim getting knocked out and Los Angeles losing to San Jose. But it winds up being a weird setup where you have the top two seeds in the West playing each other in the second round, and if I'm not mistaken, the 6 and 7 seed playing each other on the other side of the bracket. What do you think about the current playoff format and whether or not there should be reseeding after the first round?
I'm not a big fan of constantly changing things. So I'm okay with leaving it this way. I played in the era where when we had 21 teams and you had to get out of your division to get to the next round. And I played the Adams division. We had Montreal, Boston, the Quebec Nordiques, the old Colorado Avalanche, and Buffalo and Hartford, and that was a heck of a division. And the Patrick division, you know, with the Phillies and the Rangers and the Islanders, and the Smythe division out west, you had Calgary and Edmonton, arguably the two best teams in the league for many years. They battled themselves early, and the poor Winnipeg Jets couldn't get out of their division because they had to play Calgary and Edmonton so many times, and those three teams could have been the top three teams in the league for a few years. So you saw the matchups very early, but you saw great rivalries. And I also played the Norris division, or the Jack Norris division, I think they, or the Chuck Norris division, I think they used to call it, with Dallas and, or with Minnesota. Yeah. I'm dating myself here. Minnesota, St. Louis, Chicago, Toronto, and Detroit. Uh-huh. That was probably the weakest division at that time. So I like the division rivalries. I think rivalries are fantastic in the game. They really draw out the best of the players. They draw out the best of the fans. It's unfortunate that some divisions are stronger than others, but no matter how you do it, you're still going to have some sides are going to be stronger than others. And at the end of the day, you have to beat the best team to win the Stanley Cup. And whether it's in the first round or the conference final or the Stanley Cup final, I like the division build-ups. I mean, when we played, even though we weren't a good division, when I played with the Leafs and the Red Wings and the Blues and Chicago, those were great games. The fans loved them. The fans came out to them. But we were lucky to all maybe get 65 points in the course of the year. And you knew someone in the Adams division who was going to be over 500, may not make the playoffs that year, but four teams in the Norris division got in. So I don't mind it. I know a lot of people look at it and go, wow, we're losing a really good team early. And yeah, you are, but that's the way it works in division hockey, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I just prefer to leave it and let it ride for a while and build those rivalries up. And I think that's something that the league had lost when you went to the 1 versus 8 in each side, is you lost the rivalries, and playoff rivalries are what build rivalries over the course of time. And in divisions, you can't avoid playoff rivalries because you have to get out of your division. So I don't mind it. I enjoy it. And, I mean, it makes for great hockey, whether it's first round or the final round.
Yeah, I mean, I like exactly what you're talking about because growing up, I remember exactly what you're talking about with the Norris division and hating as a St. Louis Blues fan, you know, whether it be the Blackhawks, the Red Wings, the Leafs, the Minnesota North Stars, whatever the case might be. And this format allows for that. I also wonder if it was done in part because in the first 5 years of the decade, the Blues were playing the Sharks three times and then the Canucks one time. And so you have that time zone disparity, which leads to really late starts. However, unfortunately for the Blues and Blackhawks, and you had Pat Connolly get all fired up about it in the first round, talking about those late starts, we're going to have another one of those 8:43 local times, both in Dallas and in St. Louis, for Game 3. What is your opinion on that? I realize you're not in a position to do anything about it, and you are working as an NHL Network analyst. It just sucks in the sense that you have these great series going on, and some of the games are getting over at 11:30 or even after midnight if they go to overtime.
Well, in the local times, no question, it can be difficult, especially for the if you've got young children and you're working early in the mornings, it's difficult. But there are fans of teams all over the country, and I think that's really what you're appealing to, is trying to make sure everybody can see the games and stagger the starts. I played in Colorado when we were winning, and you're having the odd 5 o'clock start time, which really would throw you off. And as a player, you get in a routine, and that's probably more of a problem for anything. It's the routine of the players that they get frustrated. And even the 8 o'clock start times when I was playing were frustrating because most of the games were 7 o'clock start. But I think it's fantastic for the fans all over the country to be able to watch. I remember playing with the Leafs, and we'd go down to Los Angeles, and we'd have piles of fans at the games, and the Red Wings would come into any building I played with, and the Chicago Blackhawks, the original six teams, and they'd have fans all over the country. I mean, we had more fans in Dallas for the Red Wings half the time than we had for most games when I started in Dallas the first few months. So I understand how it works for television to, you know, market the game to everybody, and I think the staggered times, it's great. I enjoy watching the staggered times because you get when I'm not working and I'm not in studio and I've got six monitors with games on them, when I'm at home and I'm trying to flick around to watch every game or watch parts of it, I get a better opportunity to see more of each game. So I enjoy that. I understand it's difficult for the late games in the home markets, but when you look at the whole body of the playoffs, you're probably only going to run into three or four of those late starts. I think there's only a couple in the first round, and I think there's only one, maybe two in the second round if you get through seven games. So I understand the frustration with the home crowd, but it is you're also appealing to those people in the East Coast or West Coast who more on the East Coast who want to watch their team play even though they're not living in that market.
Final question for you, the meaningless prediction question, but I'm curious where you are on this. Who will play in the Stanley Cup Finals and who will hoist the cup?
I heard the first part of the question, who will play the Stanley Cup final. I didn't hear the second part, so I'll answer the first part. I had my brackets. I had Washington playing Los Angeles in the Cup final, and I'm going to change that now. and again, I hate to pick St. Louis because every time I pick them, they seem to lose. But the way the Blues are playing, I think it's going to be the Blues and San Jose, and that one will be a pick'em series. But I'll have to pick St. Louis chatting with you guys. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if either team came out, but in my mind, it'll be St. Louis, and it's going to be tough to knock off Washington, although Pittsburgh did a heck of a job in yesterday's game, even though they lost.
Right.
They outplayed them for a better part of the game. So in my mind, I still see Washington coming out, but right now, I think St. Louis has got a great chance to get to the final.
Good stuff, Dave. We appreciate it. Thanks so much, Dave Reed, the NHL Network analyst and two-time Stanley Cup champion, including 99 with Ken Hitchcock and the Dallas Stars, our guest on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Dave, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the series.
We're looking forward to it. That is Dave Reed with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, presented by the National Blues Museum. Doug, you and I were locked in on the Blues in either Panthers or Caps. And what would it be like if T.J. Oshie returned to St. Louis for the Stanley Cup Finals?
That'd be the perfect matchup. You see, he had a hat trick last night.
I call it a Hattie.
Score, yeah. Hattie and OT for the game winner.
That's big.
OT. He has 7 points in 7 playoff games so far with Washington.
Does it?
He didn't necessarily have the greatest success in the postseason with the Blues.
No, he did not. Does it worry either of you that virtually everybody that's come on the radio station has picked the St. Louis Blues in the series?
I don't think Katie Kay did yesterday, she but did outside not. Of that, people who have played in the league have said that they are picking the Blues. And then that led me to something that comes with, I guess, doing this for a while, which is observing a number of times where we have thought one way, either good going in, and then it wound up being bad, and you can do that with the Rams, you can do that with the Cardinals, and you can do that with the Blues. And I cited Forsberg with the spleen in 2001 Western Conference Finals, of course, the Rams and Patriots, my God. And there have been some Cardinals series as recently as 2014 when the Nationals, which were the favorite, were knocked off by the Giants. People are like, oh, sweet, including myself, Cardinals will beat the Giants. And then, of course, it was an even year, so San Francisco won. On the other hand, there have been a number of times where we're like, oh, Cardinals don't really have a shot. See the 2006 World Series that were picked by people to lose in three games somehow, and they won that. And then the Blues, and you can pick a few series over the years. I think around North America, most people were picking the Blackhawks.
Yep.
So it has worked the opposite plenty of times. I guess the only way you go, does it worry me? I guess that would mean if fans are getting their hopes or expectations up that, oh, they'll breeze through this and then they lose, then it sets up for disappointment. I was going into this season, specifically the postseason, saying if they don't get past the second round, they will have to make an administrative change. And after the Blackhawks series, A, the regular season, which is consistent with what they've done under Hitchcock, but B, the performance in the first round, I would have even had a tough time. I think they probably would have let Hitchcock go or he would have left. But I think it really requires – it's not as simple as hair trigger – you got to go. I guess if it's a business thing and you're like, we're not going to be able to sell season tickets and sponsorships if we keep things in place. But I feel like the organization made a huge mistake. Not, I mean, everybody will agree with this now, but even at the time in 2004, I was really confused as to why Joel Quenneville was let go. And that's not results oriented with what he's been able to do and what is now clearly a Hall of Fame career in Chicago. Because, you know, and Doug is on the opposite end of me on a lot of this stuff. But if you do have an organization that's consistently competing and you do have a sport like hockey, especially a series like that one with the Blackhawks, ask Brent Seabrook about post-to-post, you know, you can't necessarily blow it up if the performance is at a high level. And even if that Seabrook puck does go in and then they wind up losing that game, I'm not sure I could have gone on the air the next morning and said, yeah, you got to blow it up. I would have understood if they would have, but to me it requires, if you really, really...
A lot more than just, oh, they lost the series.
So therefore, now if they would have gotten shipped, to me the way that the Minnesota series last year went, you go, God, it's another bad postseason. They got worked in a few of those games. Yep. Granted, they worked them over in one of them, but that was a different conversation. So along those lines, it gets to expectations. And so I suppose locally, with all of the positivity people are hearing now regarding the Blues, which is because they beat the Blackhawks, and it was a great series, and it was a Game 7, and so therefore it got a lot of attention, the expectations around experts in the league and those who played are that the Blues are going to win. But it doesn't change the fact that the team they're playing at the most points in the Western Conference and puts up a hell of a lot of goals.
Yep.
And so from my standpoint, I'm by no means... I don't think as a Blues fan you can ever get to the point where you expect playoff victories. I'm certainly not there.
Right.
But I love what I see going on around the area where you have the city, many people in the city united on this common cause of seeing this team advance.
Yeah. I've been on the record as saying even had they lost that first round series, I wouldn't blow anything up. There's nothing about the team I don't like. I don't see anybody out there not giving it everything they have. Just because a couple of bounces of the puck would have gone against them if it had in Game 7 to say, well, the coach has got to go, you got to make change, I would be totally against that.
But
I don't think it's warranted. I don't think it would be fair.
I understand that.
I don't think it's necessary.
But you do recognize, and Tim made the excellent point about the business side and at what point, and again, this wouldn't have been necessarily the same type of loss in the opening round or in the postseason. But at what point do you need to make a change to continue to move tickets? I mean, how big an impact would it have been? Again, I think
most fans are smart. The people that buy tickets are wise enough to know that they've got a good team here put together and that things
happen. But how many years can you beat your head against the wall?
Well, they've done it for 50 right now when they get 19,000 a game.
That's true. It is true. It is their base is the most loyal of any fan base I've seen, pretty much.
I could see how if they lost to the Blackhawks that Hitchcock might shut it down. I mean, he may shut it down
on his own,
no matter what happens at this point. And there's going to be some player movement. There always is, a little. But to say that player movement is necessitated by a loss to the Blackhawks in round one, I don't think that
would be fair. It wasn't by the way they played.
Again, that's the thing. The Wild series was horribly disappointing. They played terribly in a few of those games. And it was after another great regular season. So you're analyzing not only the manner with which they played, but at that point, a body of work of the 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 postseasons. And you sit there and you go, okay, maybe for whatever reason, I don't know why, you got to make a change because they just can't get it done in the postseason with this head coach. And also, it's not just they lost, but the way that they played. And that is why I viewed it differently. Or at least there was a lot more nuance to what I think would be the discussion after this year. Again, I think Hitchcock may have left anyway, and he might still leave, by the way, anyway, whenever this run comes to an end. But that last year was a different program than this year, because this year they played a great team, and the games were so intense, and either one of those teams could have won, I feel like, any of the games. I guess the one you could say was totally the Blackhawks was game six, but the Blues were up 3-1 in that game.
Yeah.
So it's weird to say that was the one that the Blackhawks
kind of dominated.
It was a 2-goal lead, got them.
Well,
you're right.
It's dangerous.
The non-ling will tell you that. Yeah. What do we have here? The phone lines are lit up. Oh. Excuse me?
Who's this?
Arnold. Yo.
Yep. Timberfake.
Am I on?
Yes.
Hey, what's up? This is 2.0 today.
All right, did we wake you up?
No, man, I'm having a bad night. But look, everyone wants to see a fighting St. Louis. I'm going to raise $10,000 at Wave Tackle on about, I don't know the specific day yet, but for McKernan's charity and the Cash charity, where you guys are going to pick a charity, we're going to raise $10,000 for the play, baby, and just whatever charity you want. I get love. And
how are you going to raise the money?
I'm not mentioning people's names on air. Like, I'll talk McKernan off air, but we'll talk about it. But I'm going to raise maybe $15,000, maybe $20,000.
How?
Yeah, how are you going to do it, Timber?
What do you mean? It's not about how I'm going to do it. It's already going to happen. $5,000's easy, but let's shoot for $20,000.
So you think people will just come by and start giving you
going up? I need the cat there,
too. Of cash?
I feel like I'm watching Mike Bush and Bob Richards at Crestwood Mall doing the television. Just the tote board just keeps going up. But yet there's no explanation.
There's no reason why.
Well, I'll tell McKernan off the air. I just keep it sexy. I drink sexy coffee. Yeah. But, you know, I'm 2.0 now, man. I'm going to get back to it. You know, like Trick Daddy. Trick love the kids, you know.
Right, Doug.
I don't know what that means.
So
I'm a John Stamos of St. Louis, man. I want to get back to my community.
Right. Well, now, I love the fact you're doing it, Timber, but how are you going to do? You just going to say, hey, come give me money?
Who is this? Is this Randolph Jr.?
It is, my friend.
Clip it off.
Who's in the studio today? I get confused every day.
Randolph Jr.
Tim, Doug, and me.
Oh, how I'm going to do it is because we could just have a – we'll talk about it off air, but, like, we could just show up at
– You called now. We want to know what the plan is.
Coffee. I guarantee you there'll be a line out there for – charge $10, there'll be sexy coffee waiting on everybody.
$10 for what? For the coffee? You're going to serve $10.
I'll bring that girl. You know that girl that was sitting in the Blackhawks with the blonde shirt?
Right behind.
Not the blonde shirt, but the girl with the blonde hair. Like, I'm saying her, man. I don't brag about it, but
man. You don't know her. How do you know her?
Because I banged her, man. This stuff me bones. I've been had that since I've been real to your Holyfield. Before producer Joe was producer Joe.
All right, so you're going to stand at a coffee shop and charge people.
We're going to do a fundraiser. I guarantee you it makes $5,000 at Wave Taka. Wave Taka.
Okay, you stand at Wave Taka and you sell cheap coffee for $10.
Oh, well,
sexy coffee. You call it sexy coffee.
Yeah, you got to get the. I'm gonna judge some more girls. I talked this about somebody that's a secret sex show.
What hallucinogens are you on this morning, Timberfink?
I'm not under no delusions. I'm saying I'm going to make $5,000 for charity, to any charity you want.
Now, it was 10, then it went up to 15 and 20. Now it's down to 5. Doug, yeah. It's all over them. It's
put,
a moving
put Mike
target.
Lee on the air, please.
Can we get Mike?
Got to call the Steak and Shake on Olive.
Well, that is very that's very nice of you to do, Timberfake.
Hey, I'm 2.0, man.
Yep.
What does that mean exactly? You're reinventing yourself?
No, the cat reinvented me.
How? What did he do to reinvent you?
Because he keeps it sexy in Milwaukee at the Pfister.
Okay, now that makes some sense.
Pfister Hotel.
Yeah, finally, we say something that makes sense.
Pfister is like a Belladonna film. I've seen it.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, that's the haunted hotel.
It is like, I'm really going to raise $5,000. You guys pick the charity. I want the cat to pick the charity. Right. Me and my homie John Carroll are going to do some big bangs.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
When is the date? Do we know? That's probably an off-air deal. Timberfake, do you have the date for the taco deal?
Uh-oh. I think he passed out. He's gone.
Yep, he's gone. Pinkled us right there at the end. Well, it's a great cause.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Yeah. But you don't have to go today. Yeah. I mean, a lot of you may be in your car going, all right, I'm going to wave taco right now, and I'm giving my $10, $12, $15.
Oh, when you think about the kids.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't help but give a little bit of
you money. Might be able to raise $5,000 for him for the help.
A lot of people are offering to punch him if they can give him $10. So I see now the business model. All right, we got to break. Kelly Chase is up next. Ryan Kelly, morning.